Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the Fantasy Throwdown Podcast, bringing you the latest updates from the world of sports, gambling, and pop culture. Because you can't have a show without hot takes or a Tiger King meme these days. Know what I'm saying? Now, with over 200 episodes and ready to get after it again, here's your host, Dwayne Callender.
Hello, everyone. Still recovering from the surgery earlier, so I'm going to try to keep my thoughts as brief as I can with the games that went on earlier. I mean, we just had the Chiefs-Bills game, and a lot to talk about because of how some of those games played out. You got a Chiefs-Buccaneers Super Bowl, so I'll give my thoughts on that as well briefly. Let's just talk about the Green Bay Packers here, because this was just a debacle of a game. Truth be told, the Buccaneers deserved to win that game. It was 31-25. I mean, 31-26. But literally, the... I mean, it's a joke. It really is a joke that the Packers were even in this game because of how poorly the decision making was on all accounts. Mike Pettine cost the Packers this game, and it wasn't even close. It wasn't close. I don't know how else to say it, but the Packers were not in this game. To be perfectly honest with you, until Tom Brady started making mistakes in the second half that were more unforced errors by trying to chuck the ball down the field instead of trying to bleed clock. I mean, realistically, Tampa allowed the Packers back into this game because they insisted on keeping things aggressive when Leonard Fournette was having the game of his life. I mean, Leonard Fournette, he's had bigger rushing days from his Jacksonville days, but realistically, some of the runs Leonard Fournette was making, we haven't seen Leonard Fournette do that since college. His touchdown run, the best comment I saw on Twitter about his touchdown run that involved multiple broken tackles and not one, but two spins. The best comment I saw was, "This run uses every button on the controller," and I forgot to write down who actually is, said that on Twitter, but the dude who wrote that, I mean, it was incredible watching Leonard Fournette, who we have dogged, and believe me, I'm one of the people who dogged Leonard Fournette. I was debating whether or not I had made a tragic mistake drafting him in season-long fantasy just because, you know, you didn't know what you were going to get. But Fournette showed up. Fournette is going to be one of the few Jags players to actually play in a Super Bowl from when Jalen Ramsey said they were going to win that against against Brady a couple of years back with the famous Duval run. But, you know, like I said, Packers defensive coordinator Mike Pettine deserves to get fired. Not just because people are going to be talking about that game for a variety of reasons, most of them involving Matt LaFleur. And we'll get to the Matt LaFleur decision point as well, because that's also something we need to talk about. That's why, you know, in spite of everything, I'm trying to do the discussion here and get out of here, at least with some quick thoughts on the games. But Mike Pettine allowed Tom Brady in the first half to convert on these third down possessions in the first half. Third and 13, third and 9, third and 7, third and 4, and a third and short as well. That was the difference of the game. Tampa was able to still keep the ball moving along. Green Bay never really got set in their offense because Tampa didn't get off the field. And then, to compound things, the inexplicable call, after a timeout no less, to have no safety help over the top with Tampa's receivers. Scotty Miller gets loose. King, the defensive back, loses track of Scotty Miller. He gets caught peeking in the backfield. Again, you got a blitz package. Why is your DB peeking in the backfield? It makes no sense. But be that as it may, Scotty Miller gets in behind King. There's no help over the top. Touchdown, back-breaking play to end the half. Backbreaking, because it puts Tampa up 2 scores, and now they have as much as they can do to actually to start salting the game away, which didn't happen. It did not happen. That made it 21-10. Tampa then started inexplicably trying to chuck the ball down the field and got the Packers back into the game. And then people started thinking, oh, the Packers are coming back and winning this game. But my concern with this game was, you know, if the Packers could not run the ball and Vita Vea looked healthy as a bull, Vita Vea might actually be, and I'm jumping ahead, he might be the difference in the Super Bowl, how that game goes. I'm just saying it now. He might be the difference maker, along with JPP, Jason Pierre-Paul. But, you know, I just had to say, you know, what are the Green Bay Packers if they can't run the football? And, you know, people have accused me of being a Packers hater all year long and all last season. It's not that I hate the Packers. I just question the system, because if I hear it one more time, and it happened like eight times yesterday, where I'm just like about to scream my head off, saying Jordan Love being selected in the first round was the right move by the Packers because it lit a fire under Aaron Rodgers. No. That's just trying to back into dumb logic. Here's what would have helped Aaron Rodgers if you were serious about a Super Bowl window. Chase Claypool at wide receiver. Or you could have gone the route of taking, you know, probably along the lines of T. Higgins, who's a better fit for the Packers than Claypool. But you know what those two players are? They're better than Marquez Valdez-Scantling. And even though Scantling had the game of his life, basically, with 4 catches for 115 yards and the 50-yard bomb, could not punish Tampa. He had 6 targets. He's not open. Why do you think Aaron Rodgers was force-feeding Davante Adams the ball? Tampa had multiple guys blanketing Adams the entire game. he still got 15 targets. You know why he got 15 targets? Because no one else on this team is open. People keep saying that you're force feeding the ball to Adams, but you know, even I said he was force feeding the ball to Adams. But you saw on the some of those possessions that even at the goal line, Alan Lazard's head is not up. His head is not looking for the ball, and Rodgers throwing right at him. Lazard thinks it's a run play. The ball just sails past his head. That was, he may not have gotten in at the very end, because that was basically the end of the game. He may not get in because there are defenders there, but he at least gets him to the 1 or 2 yard line. At worst, the 2 yard line, probably the one with his momentum. But I think he had a chance to try to getting in there, taking on the defenders, but he wasn't even looking for the ball. Aaron Rodgers receivers outside of Davante Adams are basically number three wide receivers at best. There needs to be a legitimate passing threat off of Adams to get attention away from him. You look at Tampa's side, Mike Evans doesn't have a big day, but he still gets 8 targets. But even without Antonio Brown, you still have Chris Godwin. Scotty Miller did his job and stretched the field. Tyler Johnson had a great catch. But you still had a number of passing routes available to folks. You know, I keep looking for Gronk to have bigger games, but realistically, Gronk's greatest asset to this Tampa team is his blocking. Gronk's still a great blocker. They don't really need him to run that many routes. Like, Cameron Brate's actually more of the receiving tight end than Gronk at this point, because they just want to have Gronk in there to block, and Gronk's happy to do it. But, yeah, it's one of those situations where you look at it and you see the glaring holes, because on the day, Green Bay ran the ball 16 times for 67 yards, but they were having a tough time dealing with Tampa's interior. And they only started getting a little bit more success. Their longest run of the day was only 12 yards. Both Aaron Jones and Jamal Williams were able to do it. But it's because they were able to bounce the ball to the outside. They were able to get some stretch runs going. But when you're down 2 scores in the second half, it makes it very hard. Like, early on in the game, when Green Bay had the opportunities to try to run the ball, they were trying to run it up the tackle. Like, you're not going to be able to do that against Tampa. It's just not going to happen. So, it was just a bad game plan to start. And, you know, here's how they opened up the second half. Down 11. First down pass to Aaron Jones out in the flat. Second down pass to Aaron Jones, incomplete. Third down pass to Aaron Jones. Like, it made no sense. You need to dial up some plays to get yourself back into the game early. And the Packers just were check down city. Matt LaFleur had a brutal game against Todd Bowles, the much maligned former head coach of the Jets, now the defensive coordinator of the Buccaneers. And guess what? He's got that unit more than ready to try to win a Super Bowl, because the Bucs can actually do some things to frustrate the Chiefs and make a good account of themselves. But, you know, Matt LaFleur is going to be heavily criticized, as well he should. You know, I waited a good, I think we got a good 10 minutes into the discussion here. So let's talk about what happened. Packers down 8. It's 2 minutes and 10 seconds left to go in the game. The Packers have squandered multiple chances at the 8-yard line. At the 8-yard line of Tampa. Like I said, down 8. 2 minutes and 10 seconds left to go in the game. Down 8. Down 8. Matt LaFleur opts to kick a field goal. Opts to kick a field goal down 8 with just over 2 minutes left to go in the game. I've had this rant multiple times for those of you listening to the podcast. I've talked about this before at length. Analytics is not the problem. The problem is coaches who don't quite understand how to properly apply analytics, then citing analytics as the rationale why they make their boneheaded decisions is the problem. Aaron Rodgers on the season, including the postseason, so regular season and postseason, had 53 touchdowns and 6 interceptions all year. With the season on the line, he opted to roll the dice with Mike Pettine against, if you don't want to say Brady's the greatest quarterback of all time, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, and a plethora of wide receiver options, even without Antonio Brown. He banked on Mike Pettine, and I don't have the time to go into Mike Pettine's complete coaching resume, but let's just say it's not exactly the most stout defensive resume. It ain't like you got Marvin Lewis or Rex Ryan on your side. He opts to go with Mike Pettine instead of Aaron Rodgers, because even if you get the stop, which is a big if. Because the first down ends the game, which Tampa got the first down. Even if you got the stop and you punt the ball back, best case scenario, you've got maybe 27 seconds left to drive from anywhere from, the best case, your own 40. Most likely, it's probably going to be somewhere around the 25 or 30 yard line after a punt. You got maybe less than 30 seconds. Like, at best, you basically got 30 seconds left. With the Packers timeout situations, they got about 30 seconds left to actually get there in terms of getting a stop, driving back down the field. There's just not enough time. Maybe it would be defensible if we were talking about 3 minutes. Like, 3 minutes is probably the last cutoff I could probably give you credit for. The three-minute mark late in the fourth quarter. 4 minutes, okay. We could have a conversation here on the thought process of getting a stop, you know, not taking a low percentage chance of getting into the end zone and not getting it done. But the idea that you're going to kick a field goal, get a stop, drive back down the field with under 30 seconds left, the chances of that are so low that you have to go for it on fourth down and try to get the touchdown. There's no defending this. None. There's just none. And if you listen to Aaron Rodgers after the game, he just kind of threw the floor under the bus saying, "It's not my call on that," and that he needs more time to think about what lies ahead for him. If I'm Aaron Rodgers, my team doesn't draft a wide receiver. They draft a quarterback, give me no help. I still ball out with Davante Adams, but in the playoffs, it rears its ugly head again. When we can't run the ball, these receivers can't get open if they double cover Davante. And I got a single man coverage with these receivers, other receivers. They can't get themselves open. What is Aaron Rodgers supposed to feel like at this stage? What's he supposed to do? In his mind, he's done everything he could to get to this point, back to the Super Bowl, and he's not getting the support that he's looking for. So, of course, Aaron Rodgers is incredibly disappointed. Like, who wouldn't be? But it's insane to think that a head coach at this high of a level can make such a drastic tactical mistake regarding time management. It's inexcusable, and yet all the time if people bring out the chart saying, you know, in terms of the analytics, this is why you your percentage plays of going for it here versus trying to take some points, this is your win percent. Guys, sometimes you can do the math, but other times you actually have to try to win the game. And it's less than 2 minutes. You got just over 2 minutes left. Realistically, so many things can go wrong for you to try to get that stop. Like, you have to put it in the hands of your best players. And your best players are on offense. It's just indefensible, that call. Green Bay will never get over that call. Because I've said it before, I didn't think the Packers were as good as people have said they were this year. They were the beneficiaries of the 49ers getting hurt. The New Orleans Saints just letting Drew Brees drive the team bus over the cliff, and no one actually taking control of the wheel instead of Brees. It really should have been the Saints' year. Yeah, like I said, the Niners just were not healthy. And then, you know, the also-rans just weren't there. Seattle imploded their own season on their own volition. And then my next pick from there was actually going to be the Bucks. Like, I actually like the Bucks more than Green Bay. My whole thing with the Bucks was, you don't know what you're getting out of Tom Brady more often than not, but if you get good Tom was there for the first half. Bad Tom showed up in the second half, which is very uncharacteristic. Usually good Tom lasts if he's locked in early, he's going to be good the entire game. I don't know what happened in that second half, but like I said, Tampa should have blown out Green Bay the way Tampa had played that first half. I thought Tampa was going to cruise to a victory by two touchdowns. I was pretty confident Tampa was winning that game. Brady just kind of lost the mojo in the second half, and that's what allowed the Packers comeback more than anything else. But the fact that Matt LaFleur, you know, after being given a gift from Tom Brady, just decided to, I can't even find the words to say it might be the most cowardly coaching decision of all time. I can't believe he actually went with the logic of, yeah, we definitely can get a third down. We can definitely get a three and out and get the ball back with under 30 seconds left. And still, again, think about the time logic. You won't go for it on fourth down from the Tampa 8, but you're going to take the chance that you're going to get that touchdown with under 30 seconds left, driving all the way down the opposite side of the field and being way out of range, and then try to get the touchdown. Because, yeah, you would have needed a two-point conversion just to get the tie on the first end. But that's why you don't do dumb things to chase two-point conversions early. And this is a separate discussion, but the folks who keep arguing, well, you know, the decision would have been easier for him to make if he went for two earlier in the game. No, it's not an easier decision if he goes earlier in the game, because if you miss the two-point conversion early in the game, it's not even a discussion point. They wouldn't be down 31-23. They would be down 31-22. Like, they wouldn't be in a position to tie the game. The reason why you don't kick, you don't go for two recklessly unless you are very confident in your ability to convert it. I don't care about expected value. I care about the actual conversion. As much as NFL kickers have been on the flaky side kicking extra points since they moved back the extra point, it's still a 94% conversion rate to get the one. The conversion rate for two-point conversions is still only at 50%. Unless you know the defensive player is out for the other side, or you've got a play that you know and is very confident that it's going to work, and every coach thinks they're so confident about the two-point conversion play. Oh, we got to play for that. You don't go for two if you don't have to, because if you miss it, then it takes the option off the table. Folks who keep saying it gives you more information by going for two early, here's my counterargument. It gives the other team information, too, because if they know you're going to be chasing points the rest of the game, they know what you're going to be doing. You're going to be more aggressive in some of the play calls. It goes both ways. It doesn't. It's not binary where only one side benefits from knowing if the other side's going for two or not. I'm sorry. It's just not the case. I can't be any clearer than that. So, yes, there are going to be folks blaming analytics for Matt LaFleur's decision. No, analytics had nothing to do with Matt LaFleur choking in the biggest spot of his entire coaching career. That's not on analytics. That's on Matt LaFleur. And no, it doesn't mean that you should be celebrating that, oh, more application of analytics is needed. No, it's time and a place. So let's get to the Chiefs-Bills game because I spent quite a bit of time on Tampa and Green Bay, but Chiefs game, you know, this was a classic live bet situation because you watch Patrick Mahomes move around yesterday and you see that A, no lingering effects from the concussion, and B, the turf toe wasn't bothering him. If Patrick Mahomes is healthy, the Chiefs are always the favorite. That was a live bet situation where even when the Bills got up early, I still looked at Patrick Mahomes being healthy, and I'm saying Chiefs are winning this game. That was just a live bet situation. Bottom line, the Bills took advantage of Mecole Hardman's a flub of a punt return, got up two scores, and the Chiefs proceeded to outscore the Bills 38-6. In that time frame, where the Bills only scored 6 points. They had fourth and goal from, I believe it was the 2 as well as the 6 yard line. And basically the Bills settled for field goals. You know, most of the time I would say, okay, maybe you can get away with kicking the field goal, especially if you want to not give the home team momentum. The problem is, when you're playing against the Chiefs, you have to actually push everything to the limit and put your chips in, because the Chiefs are more talented than you. There's no getting around that. You could try to play a little bit more disciplined, but I still haven't seen anyone come up with a legitimate game plan to slow down and completely nullify the Chiefs, other than Bill Belichick. And even Bill Belichick, those game plans only work for about 3 quarters, and then the Chiefs usually figure out what Belichick's trying to do and then start getting their points. But Belichick's the only guy I've seen be smart enough to come up with something to slow down the Chiefs enough that you can get the lead on them. Because the key is, you have to get the lead on them and get through halftime with the lead and be able to carry it into the third quarter, and then try to salt away the game. That's the game plan for beating the Chiefs. You have to basically shorten the game and hold on to the lead long enough to make sure that the Chiefs, when they do get to start blitzing you offensively, because they just wear you out with their skill position players, that the snowball effect just starts happening, and then it's all over. You cannot get any traction. So, it's been clear as day that the Bills were not going to be in that game from the second quarter on. I really just did not see much of anything. And the other thing that was surprising again to me was the fact that the Bills didn't seem to learn anything from the first encounter with the Chiefs, because they ran pretty much the same offense against the Chiefs that they did in week 6, and the Chiefs were ready for it. I was expecting a lot more of Stephon Diggs being used in the slot, being moved around, trying to do different things with wide receiver screens. I thought they were going to fully feature Stephon Diggs in the offense and take pressure off of Josh Allen, because the Chiefs were always going to blitz Allen. Steve Spagnuolo was not going to let Josh Allen be able to pick and choose who his receivers are going to be. He was going to force him to make quick decisions. And I figure, you know, you'd have Stephon Diggs running the short routes to be the hot read and get him the ball. What ended up happening is the Chiefs had some very tight blanketed coverage on Diggs, and the Bills receivers could not win one-on-one matchups against the Chiefs DBs. Josh Allen had no one to throw the ball to, and he was getting pressured all game long. You know, I give Josh Allen credit for not imploding with multiple picks, because he could have just forced the ball down the field and just kept turning the ball over with how good the Chiefs coverage was. He stayed disciplined, and I give Josh Allen credit for it. I'll be the first to admit when I get it wrong, but you know, Josh Allen played a very solid game yesterday in spite of all the circumstances being thrown at him. The Chiefs had a better executed game plan, and he did not completely implode. He very well had a rationale to just say, "Hey, I'm going to force it into Stephon Diggs no matter what, and just throw it up in the air." But the Chiefs had too good of a coverage. I think most of those balls get picked. I just thought it was a better defensive game plan by the Chiefs compared to what the Bills are running. I mean, Steve Spagnuolo took Brian Daboll's lunch money and ran off of it. I mean, it's just that simple. Like, Daboll got outclassed completely. And, you know, at times, it kind of looked like the reverse of what happened to the Ravens when they were playing the Bills. The Ravens had no answers on the road, and the Bills were in a similar boat. They were very much struggling to come up with ideas on how to A, slow down the Chiefs, and B, how to actually keep their team on the field so that the Chiefs offense doesn't get back in there. I mean, if you look at the Chiefs' possession since first quarter, they went touchdown, 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 field goal. Like, that was the game. Like, the Chiefs just turned the game on a dime, and it was over. It was over. The score was 31-15 at that point. The game was over. So, you know, and the other stat, now it's 31-0, but, like, the stat going in was, Patrick Mahomes is 30-0 at halftime on normal rest. So, like, not a, short rest game where you got a primetime game and then a short week. The only time he lost was, like, a short turnaround week. And I believe, who did he lose to? Man, now I'm blanking on the game now. What that game ended up being. Basically, even on primetime rest, and a short turnaround, he's 34-1 at halftime with the lead. 30-0 on normal rest. Like, you cannot be down to the Chiefs at halftime with Mahomes. It's just the math doesn't work. You have to be ahead, and you have to be able to salt the game away. It's just that simple. Kicking field goals is just not going to get it done. And again, bad analytics on display, because you had folks complaining that Sean McDermott needed to go for two earlier in the fourth quarter instead of just kicking the extra point. Here's the thing. Just because you go for two doesn't give you necessarily benefit you directly. If you convert, yeah. But there's also something to be said of, if I kick the extra point and I'm only down 16, I know what I need to do moving forward. Like, you get information both ways, but one result is more likely than the other to occur as to the total points, and you rather take the conversion. But the Bills were out of the game anyway, but that's where the whole analytics discussion came up on both sides. Between LaFleur not knowing that he needed to actually roll with his best options, and the Bills kicking field goals when, realistically, they needed to go for touchdowns earlier in the game. And it kind of made it a moot point. But, yeah, I'm just... I'm very curious for this Super Bowl, because you got Brady in his 10th Super Bowl. You know, everyone's going to be talking about, is Brady the greatest of all time? Can Mahomes get there? Listen, this is Brady's potential revenge game against Steve Spagnuolo, because he remembers what happened in 07. And, you know, truth be told, it's very much a situation where he could get caught up yet again with both Chris Jones and Frank Clark getting him off his spot. And you can see Brady getting unraveled by the Chiefs defense. I can see that happening in the Super Bowl. I really could. I think that's going to be one of the most interesting aspects of the game. Can Brady score points to keep Tampa in this game? Because I think that even with Jason Pierre-Paul and Vita Vea trying to slow down the Chiefs, I think the Chiefs are still going to score on Tampa's defense. I really do. I think, realistically, Tampa's going to have to find a way of getting to 30. Basically, they got to get to 30. I think the magic number to have a chance against the Chiefs is 34 points. I think if you can get to 34, you have a chance. But I think that's realistically the only pathway for Tampa Bay to beat the Chiefs this year. They really do need to find a way to get there, because I don't know there's much of a pathway to do it if for some reason you've got the Chiefs with a lead at halftime. I don't see where Tampa is going to be able to get it done without turnovers. I just don't see Tampa's offense, and maybe Antonio Brown gets healthy and becomes the difference maker, but I don't see where Tampa's offense does enough against the Chiefs, because I know what the Chiefs are going to be able to do to Brady to get him off his spot. Spags knows the formula of beating Brady. It's not a secret. You got to get him off his spot. You have to actually, you have to be able to find a way of protecting Brady, and I'm not entirely convinced Tampa can. Now, on the Chiefs side, Eric Fisher blew out his Achilles, so the Chiefs offensive line is definitely going to be weaker now. That does give a little bit of a boost to Tampa on the pass rush side to getting to Mahomes. But again, Mahomes did not seem to be bothered by the turf toe. So I kind of look at this as a case where, again, this should be an interesting Super Bowl. Chiefs definitely should be favored. I'm checking now for the actual lines on the game, because I still didn't see anything open up early as of tonight, but definitely curious to see what the opening bid looks like, because I would say the biggest thing would be, along the lines of, okay, yeah, so it did open up with KC minus three. I would take KC and the over, because I got it looks at KC minus three, and the over's at 56. Only way Tampa can win is if this game shoots out, and I still think KC more than likely takes it. I just don't see enough on the Tampa side to actually get there. You know, I got to do some more research as we get closer to Super Bowl Sunday in 2 weeks. But yeah, I just think the Chiefs win this one. But you know, it's a hell of an accomplishment for Brady to get their year one with Tampa Bay. You know, it really is. You know, I know sometimes I get accused of not being as vocal with praise, but you know, it is an accomplishment. And you know, one of the things that folks got to understand is, you know, it's not easy getting a new team to buy into the system. Brady does deserve a lot of credit for what he was able to do with this Tampa squad. As talented as they are, talent doesn't always guarantee the results you may be looking for. So that's where I'm going to leave things off for now. But more to come, obviously, as we get into a Super Bowl analysis and kind of do the breakdown for DFS slate. I mean, in terms of DFS, though, but it was a brutal day because I just did not expect the Bills to be as unimaginative using Stephon Diggs. And because you had Kelce and Tyreek Hill just go off on the Bills defense, if you didn't stack Kelce and Hill in your lineups, and that meant fading Diggs, which I did not do. I had, you know, you had to take a stand, and I took a stand and paid a very brutal price in terms of lineups. That was probably my worst week of the entire season. I took my stand on Stephon Diggs or bust, and I went bust. But even if you wanted to be successful, you had to stay off of you could have played Aaron Rodgers. But salary-wise, you needed to have the pieces of the Kansas City game, namely Tyreek Hill and Kelce. And if you paired them with Mecole Hardman, all the better. Like, that puts you in the optimal, more than likely. And it just came down if you played Fournette or not, because all the other running backs were had lackluster numbers. So, you know, it is what it is. You know, sometimes you get beat by more surprising performances, and that's just the way it goes. You got to just take your L when it happens. But we'll be back ready for the Super Bowl, and we'll go from there. But until next time, have a good one, and we will be in touch sooner than later.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Throwdown Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and all other major outlets.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.